Hi, welcome to UCB's Long Form Conversations. I am John Frusciante, and missing Will Hines this week because he's directing a video, but next to me is Cypher Sounds.
Hello, thanks for having me.
And our podcast intern, of course, Cypher Sounds, and our podcast intern Keaton is also lurking in the background. And this week, our guest is Morgan Grace Jarrett.
Hello.
From Grandma's Ashes.
Yes.
Ladies Night Men Welcome.
Mm-hmm.
The Lady Jam.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of other shows and teams that we will get into eventually.
Okay.
Also, I just want to make sure it's clear that I am dying, and I'm probably going to die in the middle of this podcast recording. I have some kind of terrible cold.
Well, thank you for being here.
Yeah. This is how I want to spend my last moments.
Please die into the mic.
I'm going to make it nice and dramatic. How are you, Morgan?
I'm good. I'm also a little tie-tie.
Mm-hmm.
I was just saying to you guys, I got up really early this morning. So mm-hmm. I feel like I have that. My voice is sort of like when you don't sleep voice.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this isn't my normal voice.
Sure. Well, this podcast is going to sound like it was recorded like during a film noir.
Yeah.
Shoot.
Yeah.
It's like the Elmore Leonard version of this podcast. I'm going to have to be in charge of making all the weird references this week because Will is not here.
Sure.
Okay. So
great.
Let's talk about you for a couple minutes.
Okay.
So you're currently in Grandma's Ashes. You guys just finished up. Just handed off the improv jam.
Yes, we did.
To Guthrie.
Guthrie.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
After you did it for how long? Like
Grandma's Ashes did it for, I believe, a year and a half.
Right.
But I was not always on Grandma's Ashes.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there in the very beginning of the jam. So I guess I did it since last September.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's over a year.
Yeah.
So maybe the whole thing, I guess.
I guess. Yeah.
I don't know.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. For a long time we did it.
Right. Much beloved. Students loved Grandma's Ashes hosting the jam. You created a great environment over there.
It was such a treat. It's so amazing that it became such a great thing.
What's so great about it for you? Like, why is it such a treat?
I guess I really liked it for a couple of different reasons. I mean, it was just, I know, like, just hearing everybody, like, having such a positive, like, loving it so much is great. Everybody feeling so great about it. Having everybody say, you know, so many people feel like that it really helped them, you know, which is mm-hmm. so great. And I know I didn't have anything like that. When I was, like, taking classes, there wasn't, like, a jam like that to go to. And I think I would have really liked it when I was in classes. And just for me personally, I think it's helped me be a lot more confident in myself.
How so?
As a performer. Just, like, being more confident in, like, feeling like, oh, I have an idea for this. I'm going to do it
mm-hmm.
instead of being like, I have an idea, but I'm just going to let somebody else probably do something better.
Is that something that you have struggled with or dealt with?
I think so.
Like,
yeah.
Not trusting your own ideas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just like hanging back sort of like, not always going for it. And I feel like with the jam, it helped me to just be more confident and trust myself and make moves.
Mm-hmm.
Because we kind of like had to, you know,
sure.
Cause there would be like a couple of us would, you know, we stay up. So, like, if there's something going on in a scene and maybe, like, things are sort of not going really well, like, you sort of, that's our job. Like, mm-hmm. now it's like, oh, this is what I have to do is, like, help this scene. That's the point of the jam is that we do that. Mm-hmm. So it made me be, like, trust myself that I can do that, that I can, because, like, really I'm thinking in my head, like, well, what do I know? I don't know anything better than anybody else up here.
Right.
But so I have to trust myself that I can do something.
Yeah.
So it was good.
You do have to fake it till you make it in that way of like, well, I'm responsible for moving these scenes forward. And like if somebody's struggling in a scene, I'm responsible for like giving them gifts and helping things
exactly.
along.
Exactly. Yeah. So it really made me just trust that. And then once I started doing it, it's like, oh, I can do this. Oh, I do know what I'm doing. Oh, I understand game. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
That's going to keep happening, that violent Aww. Outburst of coughing.
Cypher,
you're a jam regular.
I am.
What did you get out of going to the jams with Grandma's Ashes? And what did you think their strengths were?
I got so much out of it. I love the jam. It is my favorite place to go. The jam is like, okay, so like, you know, me as a young student.
Yeah.
Young as in years at UCB, not an age.
Right. Important to make that distinction.
You go on stage. Well, let's say you're usually in class with people on your level. So you don't really like realize the mistakes you're making or realize how you can make it better because you're just learning with people who are just like you. And you'll get notes from the teacher, but it's after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
You guys did this, and you could have done this, or you could have done that.
Yeah.
The jam, you're live, and it's happening in that moment. So maybe two new people go up, and you feel kind of stuck. Maybe you're having a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not moving forward. And one of Grandma's Ashes will come on and what I like to call fix it.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, that's how you could fix it. Or that's how you get out of a fight.
Right.
Or that's what a gift is. And if you leave, even if that's all you do, you leave and you're like, I can't wait till next week and try to do what one of them just did.
Yeah.
You know, and it feels amazing. And it's like, I've left the jam a couple times and I thought it was horrible. And I actually, for one moment, I didn't go for like 2-3 months.
What?
You thought that the jam was horrible?
No, that
you thought you were horrible?
I was horrible.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm wasting people's time.
Oh, Saifa.
We've all felt like that. And I mean, I felt like
well,
that.
Well, I still feel like that.
I've heard other people say that, you know?
Yeah.
And then I was like, then I've, you know, more classes, more practice. And I went back and I went every week unless I had to work somewhere. And it's literally like I've seen people like leave high because they're like, I don't know. I think I'd call Lydia Hensler the fixer because
she's great.
Anything.
Yeah.
She fixes anything. And I just watch her and practice justifying stuff.
See, yeah, I think that's a great point for like any kind of performance situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like watching what you like about other people and being like, oh, how can I do more?
Yeah.
How can I be better at them than that?
Right. And each one of Grandma's Ashes has their strengths and they're all good. They're my favorite. But you know, if you're getting notes in class that you don't justify enough, you go and watch Lydia. Or you want to react, you watch Aubra.
Mm-hmm.
You want to like be supportive, you watch Morgan.
Thank you. I was wondering what my thing was going to be.
It's just one of your things.
Do you feel like you're... what do you think your strength is as an improviser?
Oh, God. I guess support. I guess that... I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
something that you feel drawn to doing? Like, oh, I want to support people?
Now that I'm saying it out loud, of course. I just love to nurture. I just want a baby. So I just treat everyone like my baby. It's no surprise there. Right. I guess support. But interestingly enough, when I first started all this, I was much more like, I don't think as supportive. I think I was more like, like in your face, sort of like
right.
crazy.
Yeah. Okay,
sort of
so let's talk about that. What brought you here? How'd you get here? What's the matter with you?
Okay, well, geez, that is so the lead-in. That lead-in is perfect.
Yeah, so how did you find improvisation? What drew you to improvisation?
Yeah, well, it's sort of weird. I don't really even know how I found it. It sort of found me, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm an actor, and so I always pursued acting. And something that happened years ago, I was living in North Carolina. And
is that where you're from?
I'm not from there, but I lived there for some time.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Virginia.
Okay.
So I always pursued acting and, you know, theater and singing and all that stuff. I never really pursued specifically comedy or improv. And growing up, I didn't even know what improv was. I grew up in the middle of a field with cows.
Okay. Not in a house or anything like that?
No,
like
just in the middle of a field. In a field with cows. So I came from like a little town. Tiny town. So any hoots, I moved to a slightly bigger town in North Carolina, not too much bigger, and just got more and more into acting. And, you know, just like I was at that age where you just, you know, you find yourself or whatever, you start finding the things in life that make you happy. And I was in a play and I like booked the lead in this play that was a comedy. And I had done some comedic acting stuff and I had done some like sketch comedy with this all female group. And a friend of mine, so I did this play and it was comedy and a friend of mine came to see it and she was like, you should pursue comedy because you have good like timing.
Hmm.
And I don't know. I don't know how I do anything. I never really took any classes or anything. I just sort of do it, you know?
It's sort of instinctual to you. You just, Okay.
So that was sweet. And this was somebody that I like trusted her opinion. And And I sort of like felt like I think I was sort of kind of like finding out what I sort of could do and couldn't do. And I was like, yeah, this did feel really good. I certainly like enjoyed doing it. It did feel right, you know, and to hear that like it went well and the play was received really well. And so I was thinking, okay, maybe I'll get more into comedy. And an old roommate of mine had said like years ago, if he ever moved to New York, he would go to the Upright Citizens Brigade. And I was like, oh, I'm going to steal that idea for later. And, I don't even know if I knew what it was. I just knew that he'd said that, and it was like an improv thing.
Okay.
And so I moved here 7 years ago in January, and by June I was in my first 101 class.
Nice.
So I just signed up.
Okay. You just heard about it, and you were like, I'm going to go and do it. Word of mouth.
Yeah. Like, I really didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. But now thinking back, I feel like I must have known something, but I don't think I did. Oh, sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Oh, sorry, I did it again. I don't know. I just knew.
Okay, so what was that like for you diving into this class that you were like, I'm just going to go and do it? What were your impressions?
It was great because I was really into it. And of course, then I was young and I was like living in New York and pursuing this dream that I have.
Right.
I don't really know exactly what it is, but I'm doing this thing and I really needed an outlet. At that point, and then through improv, I realized that I really needed an outlet my whole life that I never really had until I found improv. So I really dove into it. I don't know. I loved it. I just knew when I was here, I knew that this was going to be my thing. I just knew this was something that was going to be a big part of my life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you remember who any of the people in your 101 class, or are there any of them still around?
Okay. So my teacher was Charlie Todd.
Okay.
Who was wonderful.
And this is what year again? I'm sorry.
It was 7 years ago.
Okay.
So
that's 1998. yeah.
What is
7 years ago is 2006. Wait. Yeah.
Yeah.
2006.
And Charlie was just amazing and wonderful. And I remember him, but I like don't remember the class very well.
Mm-hmm. It's all right.
But then 201 is where everything really took off, I think.
What do you mean by that?
I feel like that was when, personally, you know, like when you first moved to New York, I'm saying, you know, because, well, you're from New York.
I'm from
New York. You didn't have to experience this maybe in the same way. Are you from New York?
I'm from Jersey.
Oh, okay.
So maybe. Yeah.
Well, when you moved to New York from middle of a field where cows live, it takes a little while to like get used to it. And just like your first year in New York is just like hard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was coming up to like ending my first full year in New York, and my 201 class was starting, and I just felt just bad. It was just hard. Like everything just was bad. You know, New York was just tough and things were just really crappy. And I had this moment on like a subway where I was like, okay, if things don't change, I'm going to leave New York because this is like not a way to live.
Okay.
And then I think the next week I started my 201, and it just, everything changed. From the very beginning of class, it's where I started my first indie group.
Okay.
Everyone in that class became my indie group, Orphan Tycoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I just made friends and just got more into the community, and just everything changed. That was just when my whole life started, I feel like.
So something just clicked in that class and in that process. Like you felt more comfortable in classes. You
like
felt
the people were there, like were serious. Like it was like a bunch of Morgans, you know?
Okay.
Like maybe like in 101, it was like sort of a mix. But then in 201, it was like, oh, we all want to do this. We all have some weird thing we need to do.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've talked about that plenty of times, but I think there is that divide. Like 101, a lot of people take 101, you know, people who are interested in improv. Some people, actors, take it just for a resume patter.
Yeah.
Some people take it to learn English better, which is weird to
me. Great idea.
but then like in 201, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, this is serious.
These are all people who clearly want to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's definitely what happened.
Excuse me.
Are you okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The end is coming, but it's not near yet.
Oh, man. Do you have a lozenge or something?
No, I'll get one. I have tea with honey.
That's good.
That's the only thing
keeping
me going.
Honey's a natural.
Lozenge?
Yeah.
Okay.
it's antibacterial.
So the first, you were on Ragnarok.
Yeah.
That was your first Harold team, right?
Yeah. So
talk about that experience.
Okay.
What year was it? What year was that again?
I think that was 2008, maybe.
Yes. Yes, it was. I believe it was 2008.
Yeah. I don't know. Ragnarok happened. It was like,
And that was a it was a pretty great team. I mean, it was Ben Remeka.
Oh my god! Yes,
Eric Dice,
Brian Glidewell, Winston Knoll, Jill Donnelly, Emily Axford.
Yes.
Oh god, just a dream life situation. Just so wonderful. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was just a great moment in time. it was my second time auditioning for Harold Knight.
Okay. How was your first audition?
My first audition was not good. It was like okay, but it wasn't.
Did you get a callback?
I don't even know. Oh, well, it was like a, I don't know. I think it was one of, it wasn't like a big one.
It was
like
an invitation only?
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe it was just the one, one time. And I was actually just talking with Chris Kelly about this because I, he was in my, my first Harold audition.
Okay.
And then he said he was in my second one too. And I'm like, no, you weren't. But he remembered the scenes that we did. So I guess we were in two auditions together.
Weird.
Anyway, funny. So it was like him and a couple and like Abby Jacobson and Paul Downs. So all these people
were
like that are so successful right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think any of us got on like the first round.
Mm-hmm.
So the second time I felt much better. I don't know. I just felt better. I just felt like ready for it. I felt good about it. And I had some like great classes that I had just taken. I think I had just taken like a Chris Gethard class.
Okay.
Yeah, that was before that. Yeah, that was. And that was like a really great class. Mm-hmm. So I felt good. I just felt good about everything. And Anthony called me like the next day and I like cried on the phone when he told me. I was just so great.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was so excited because it was just a big goal. I mean,
yeah, of course.
I know people say like, don't be competitive. And I mean, but it is. It is competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I did set that goal for myself.
The community is competitive or the idea of like progressing through?
The idea of progressing. I don't think the community, I think the community is very supportive, but I think the idea of like progressing through classes and getting on a Harold team and maybe even more so back then. I don't know if it's as intense right now, but.
It's hard for either of us to say since we're not really in the middle of that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I mean, I definitely felt like it was competitive back then. And
I think I feel my sense is that it always is. There's always like, it's a human thing to like want goals, you know,
so, and
to compete.
I did. Yeah. I set that goal for myself. Mm-hmm. So when I finally achieved it, I was just so happy. It's like probably the only goal I've ever actually achieved in life that I actually set for myself.
Well, really we'll see in the next 45 minutes whether that's true or not.
Yeah.
We'll see. So what were the things, just to step back briefly, like, what were the things that you felt challenged by before you got onto Harold Knight and taking classes? Like, do you remember things that, do you remember moments of like, oh, I'm not good at this or I'm struggling with this or that?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Nothing is sticking out to me, but I will say that I think that I was like, a little bit overconfident in an annoying way. And I'll say that because
were you
then it
conscious
changed.
Of that
it all changed.
Okay.
I don't think I was.
Just looking back on
I think maybe I was like, nothing's going to stop me, you know? And so I just like, but I mean, yeah, I think I don't know. I'm sure I know I struggled with stuff. I know I never really felt like I was the strongest person, but I was just like so into just like having the confidence behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But,
you said that that changed that like.
Yeah. Once comments. I got on Harold Knight, I like lost all. I lost all confidence. I was like,
really?
I was just constantly terrified. Never thought I was good enough.
Really?
Yes. Isn't that funny that like once you get there, then you start freaking out.
Right.
But I guess that makes sense.
I think a lot of people feel that it's like that fear of, oh, I'm going to lose this thing that I worked so hard to get.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that?
With the Harold Knight thing?
With like feeling like you were like not good enough or any of that.
I don't, loss
of confidence.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever really dealt with it. I think I just sort of like lived with it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. I think like once you get on Harold Knight, it is such a big thing. And especially if you've like built it up to be such a big thing as I did, I set this big goal for myself. And then I really wanted to like, you know, Now I've done this goal. Now I have to like push it even farther. I don't know what the next thing is, but like, how can I do this too?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I just like did it. I don't know. I just did it. But I often felt very burnt out. And I think because I just put so much pressure on myself.
Okay.
But I don't really know what I did to help it other than I just kept doing it. You know, I didn't ever stop. I didn't ever like let myself stop or freak myself out to the point where I couldn't do it.
Right. And you didn't let that lack of confidence or those panicky feelings stop you from
doing the work. Yeah. I definitely never stopped doing it. I just kept doing it and just kept doing it.
Is that a thing that you've frequently done in your life? Like when
you, I guess so.
With acting and with setting yourself towards goals, you like just keep pushing forward with it.
Yeah. Cause like what, I mean, if you, I guess you could just give up or whatever, but then like, then what are you going to do?
Right.
I mean, you got it. I don't know. So yeah, I guess I do just keep doing it and, just kept pushing forward. Cause it's such a learning and growing process with improv. You're always changing and learning and growing and, so, you know, with everything I did, I just kept growing and getting more confident and feeling better. I think, you know, actually, I will say, I think that at one point during Ragnarok, Anthony King sent us an email because we had done this group game. Can I talk about this group game?
Absolutely.
I remember it very well. Well, Ragnarok did a lot of weird group games.
Yeah. You guys were a very physical team, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was so fun.
I remember you more as like an 8-person entity rolling around on stage than like 2-person scenes or anything like that.
Insane. Gethard coached us for like the first year we were together. And I think he had such a huge part in that. We were such a weird sort of team.
Yeah. He's very team oriented.
Really amazing. So we had done this group game where, I don't remember the exact specifics, but I guess we were a circus and we just were a circus of people and we just kept coming. Like, I guess somebody was like, here comes the circus. And we just kept coming through the door at like different parts of the circus. Uh-huh. And I swear it went on for like 25 minutes. And like just when you thought it was done, like somebody would do something else. I mean, like spinning plates, like just the most, I don't even know. It was just insane. Elephants. Uh-huh. We were just like a circus full of people. And it just kept going. And like no one cut it off. And it was just a great, fun moment. And definitely a moment where I was like, oh man, this is like what improv is. It's this easy. Like it should, when it's right and when it's, you're doing it well, like it's this easy. It's so simple. And so after that show with that group game, I remember Anthony sent us an email that was like, that was a really great show. And that was a really great group game. And you guys are really doing a great job. Mm. And I think that moment where I was like, oh, okay, maybe I do know what I'm doing. Maybe this is okay. Maybe I can keep doing this.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that like kind of reinforcement.
Yeah, maybe I need positive. Maybe that's my love language, positive reinforcement.
I think it's most of our love language. I think we all need that.
Yeah, maybe I just need somebody telling me that I'm doing a good job, probably. Mm-hmm.
I think in this community, you know, I mean, in anything, it's like we're performing. We're like bearing our souls, you know. We need somebody to be like, yeah, you're doing it right.
Yeah, because inside we're like
very...
I don't know, is there anybody here who's like, I'm awesome?
I bet you there are. I bet you there are people who are like, I am just going to keep doing it. I don't judge myself or I don't care, but I'm not that person.
That's hard.
I don't even think I'm doing this right now.
I don't think I am either.
Let's skip ahead to Grandma's Ashes.
Okay.
So like you were on Ragnarok. Ragnarok was broken up. Then you were on American Cousin.
Right.
American Cousin was broken up.
Yeah, skedaddled.
Right. And then you were off of Harold. What happened after that?
Well, we can talk about this moment because I do think this is a defining moment.
Okay, go ahead.
Because what I was so afraid of finally happened.
Okay.
This idea of getting cut from Harold Knight.
Okay.
I like to say shuffled off. I got shuffled off. So it just sounds a lot nicer.
Sure.
But yeah, Ragnarok got mixed up into like a couple different groups. And American Cousin, I got put on American Cousin with some other Ragnarokers.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was only, we were only together for like a month or so. And yeah, and then I got shuffled off Harold Knight.
Yeah, it was a very quick thing with American Cousin.
Yeah, and when it finally, and this was also like years later. So some of that like new, you know, crazy feelings that I had of just like really, you know, feeling the pressure and stuff. The lights were always really bright at Harold Knight too. I remember that. Like I remember going out there and being like, God, these lights are brighter than any lights I've ever been in front of. You know, what a metaphor. But
right.
So when he called me, we had this like great conversation about it. And I was like, oh my God, this thing that I've been so afraid of for all these years finally just happened. And it was such a relief.
Hmm.
It was like, no big deal. It was just nothing. It was like, whatever.
Why do you think that was?
I think just it was always just the idea of it. It was always like the pressure of or the anxiety of this thing that you worry about. And
so
then
the
reality
fear
of
it is way, way worse than the reality of it happening.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like most things in our lives.
Yeah, what a great life lesson to learn. And I feel like now I've officially learned that lesson. I think that's happened to me a couple of times now where like the fear overtakes the actual situation. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was the final time that I needed to learn that lesson. Mm-hmm. And so it happened and it was just like, totally fine. Like I felt like, okay, this is great. Like this is an opportunity for me to like see what I want to do. Like maybe I'll take a break. Maybe I'll do something else. Maybe whatever. Maybe I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was just like,
and
fine.
What did you do?
I took like a little bit of an improv break, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that long. And then I did do mod night for a little while.
Okay.
Like a few weeks later, I joined Gramps.
Oh, you did join Gramps.
I did.
Oh, great.
Yeah, but
perfect.
Over a few months, it wasn't. Oh, were you guys questioning that?
No, that's the, we mentioned Gramps in every podcast.
Oh,
that's
do you?
The
oh
running joke.
No one's ever been on it.
Oh, great.
That's right. I think you're the first.
Oh, great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Write this down.
Oh, this is exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. And that was one of, I was like, yeah, this is great. Like, I haven't really done a lot of sketch comedy. This is a new thing for me, so I'll do this and try this out. And I loved it. It was wonderful. And I remember Delaney, who I had for 401 and is like one of my favorite people and is just an improv genius, mm-hmm. was like, after my first mod show, he was like, this is great for you, Morgan, because you were just getting lost on Harold Knight. And I was like, why didn't anyone tell me that before? Like, thank you.
Questionable thing to say to somebody.
I love Delaney. I love him. And I love that he said that to me because I'm like, thank you for telling me that I was getting lost on Harold Knight. What have I been doing? I was so worried the whole time about whatever that I was like getting lost.
Okay.
So what am I even doing with my life? I'm so worried about losing this thing and I'm not even fully participating in it, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
And Mod Night felt like a different thing for you. Felt like working different muscles. Felt like getting away, putting distance between you and.
Yeah, I mean, it was just something different to do, mm-hmm. And it was great. I mean, I love doing it. I definitely feel like my heart and soul is more improv. I definitely like that's my love. I don't have like the exact same love for sketch comedy, mm-hmm. but that's okay. We can all love different things.
Yeah.
And, but I loved my time with Gramps. Mm-hmm. They were awesome. And then Grandma's Ashes happened.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about that and we'll get back to your sketch comedy and acting and written stuff after we talk about Grandma's Ashes. But, so talk about getting put onto Grandma's Ashes.
Okay. So I felt like I grew up a little bit in those, I don't know how many months it was. I don't know. It wasn't that long, maybe mm-hmm. like 3 months or something, 3 or 4 months. And I just felt like that break was exactly what I needed. And I just felt good. And I felt like I calmed down a lot. And Nate contacted me and he was just, I knew that there was a spot possibly opening up on Grandma's Ashes, but I did not think in a million years that that would be offered to me. I don't know why. I just wasn't thinking about it at all. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if Harold Knight was ever in my future ever again.
It's not like something you were like, I'm trying to do this or I'm concentrating on
this. Yeah, I was just totally
this.
Okay with like seeing what happened mm-hmm. and just living my life and just like mm-hmm. getting in shape and like eating vegan. And
which is a big change from like that place you were in where you were like freaking out about being in New York and like, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to leave and all that stuff.
Yeah, just like focusing on myself and just like trying mm-hmm. to be my best self.
Already sort of said this, but it seems like that getting cut from Harold Knight was a big kind of spiritual awakening for you some way.
It totally was. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was exactly what I needed. And it's something I would have never done for myself. I would have never taken myself off Harold Knight.
Sure.
I would have killed myself on Harold Knight for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. I would have never, you know, like you just like, not that I'm saying it's an abusive relationship, but, you know, you just like stay in bad relationships,
right.
even if you know, I would have never taken myself out of that.
But sometimes
relationship.
Like we're the unhealthy thing in the abusive relationship.
Right. Oh,
you know what
absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely. Like, why do I keep dating bad guys? You
right,
know,
right.
It's me.
Well, it's the common denominator, which is you.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which Harold Knight is not abusive.
It's,
totally my own thing.
No, it's not. Harold Knight's not abusive at all. No. It definitely isn't.
No. So, yeah. So it just wasn't on my radar. I was just doing my thing.
Okay.
And then Nate contacted me. And, you know, I even had a moment where I was like, I think I need to think about it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I didn't even, I had a moment where I was like, do I want to go back into this? Like, what am I doing now? Where is my life? do I want to get back into that road? Like, am I going to just make myself insane? You know? But I only thought that for like 15 minutes. And and then I responded immediately with like, yes, I would love to do that.
Great.
And then it happened like immediately. He was like, great, there's a show tonight. Be there.
So you did your first show with them.
Yeah,
that
it was
night.
Like a Tuesday. And they were like, yeah, come. They rehearsed before Harold Knight anyway. So they were like, come to rehearsal and then let's do the show.
Okay. And so who is on Grandma's Ashes at this point?
At that point, Abra, BSJ, Winston, Ryan, Josh, Megan, me.
Okay.
Wait.
And one more?
Who am I
forgetting? Eric still on the...
No.
Megan, Abra. Oh my God.
Lydia. We always do that. Oh, Lydia. Right. Yes.
Yeah. The fixer.
The fixer.
If she was here, she would have fixed your forgetting of it.
She would have been like me. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I was just like so happy to be on that team. It was just like an instant like, oh God, this is, you know, like when you just find your soulmate, you know?
Sure.
And Winston is my improv husband. I'm so glad this is being recorded. Let it go down in history that we are married
it's
through improv.
It's now legally binding.
He might avoid it, but it is the truth. I've been with Winston since we took that Gethard class together and then both gone on Ragnarok together. And then we've like been together forever.
Okay. Do you feel like a special kind of like chemistry with him or a special?
Yeah, I do. And he's a dear friend of mine. He's one of my best friends and we've always been great friends and we've performed together so much. Definitely. I think he feels the same way that I could finish his improv sentence and he could finish mine. Like we know what we're going to do in the scene. If we're in a scene together, we're going to be a husband and wife who just don't love each other anymore.
Right.
And then BSJ is a dear friend and Aubrey I've known for a long time back when Orphan Tycoon would perform with like Thank You Robot.
Right.
So, and Lydia is of course a wonderful, wonderful person who I'm friends with. And Josh was on Ragnarok. So it was just like all my friends. It was just like, oh, what a great group of people. It was just instantly so wonderful. Mm-hmm. And our very first show that night was just wonderful. Just such
you
a joy.
You immediately felt like
immediately.
This is home.
It was my favorite Harold night. Mm-hmm. And just immediately that night I did a scene with Abra and BSJ where we just repeated the same three lines over and over again. And it just was like so lovely.
Joyful.
It was so joyful. Yeah.
Grandma's Ashes is one of the few teams in Harold team history to be moved directly to a weekend slot. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't happen that often. Maybe in the beginning it happened more often, but like it's more common for individual members to get plucked off of Harold Knight.
Right. Oh, yeah. This is like a whole team.
An entire team to be moved off of.
Oh, God.
So
the pressure.
Yeah. Don't fuck it up.
Right?
So like what do you think makes Grandma's Ashes so good and so like weekend worthy, you know? Like what sets you apart, like, cuz it's a whole different animal being able to make, you know, people non-Harold Knight audiences laugh, you know?
Yeah.
Like what do you think makes you so good at that?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think we'd probably all be like, well, we're not worthy. Probably we all feel like, oh, we're not worthy of this. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
But that's bullshit because you are worthy.
But
so
it's a lot of things. I think that we all love each other so much. I really do feel so close and connected with everybody. I just think that we really trust each other. And I think we've all like gotten our jitters out. Mm-hmm. And we're all like, BSJ even said something the other night where he's like, made a joke about how like we're all tired enough that we can like hang back and like let a scene go on for 30 minutes because I don't feel like dealing with it right now. You know? So like we all like I feel like we got our crazies out. There's a song. There's like this kid's song that I sing sometimes because sometimes I babysit this toddler. And it's like, you got to shake your sillies out. I just did that.
Yep. It was great.
And so I feel like we sort of all shaked our sillies out. Okay. You know, now it's time to nap or go to the weekend.
Was there a moment like, do you feel looking back on it now of like, oh, what was I so worried about on Harold Knight?
Yes. Mm-hmm. What was I doing? What a waste of time worrying like that.
Right.
But then again, it made everything happens for a reason. I don't regret anything. But yeah, I definitely feel like I spent a lot of time worrying about stuff that I shouldn't have worried about. And if I had just done it But whatever. At the same time, I am where I am.
Right.
And it all happened exactly the way it was supposed to happen. Yeah,
we can't change. Our path is our path. We can't really change what
that
happened.
That is so true.
Yeah. So, what was it like finding out that you were being moved to the weekends? You want to talk about that moment?
It was wonderful. I mean, I did not even think that that was like ever in my future or radar. Like getting to Herald Night was like the top for me. And I never thought anything else was going to happen.
So that was it for you? That was like, you didn't have a goal beyond that? But you must have
had
like
personal goals.
Right. You had career goals, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Career goals and stuff. But the thought of like, I even remember one night after like a Ragnarok show, like getting notes and sort of feeling like, oh man, I feel like I'm on like a wheel, like a mouse wheel. Like I'm never going to get out of this because I feel like I'm still getting notes about the same thing. Like these feel like the same notes we've been getting and we're not able to do these shows and we're not, like, I can't, I'm not progressing. Like this is all it's ever going to be, you know? And that's fine because like you were right. Like not many teams, do move on to that. So like that thought is just like not something I thought was going to happen. So when it did, it was just amazing. Just amazing and awesome. And so far beyond what I ever thought was going to happen. I really just thought I'd be on Herald Night for a while and probably just like leave again. And then like whatever happens, happens. So the fact that this has happened is just awesome.
You figured at some point you would like get some acting gig or just like decide you didn't want to do it anymore or something like that. You had no focus on like any of the other brass rings that are out there at the theater.
Yeah, I just didn't. I just didn't realize that like moving to a weekend was a possibility, I guess, for somebody like me.
Sure.
Maybe for other people who are good. Mm-hmm. But but yeah, but when it all happened, I mean, it definitely felt right. I mean, we, Herald Night and, you know, Grandma's Ashes, like we all felt really good. We definitely felt like we were just, I mean, all of my teams have been so wonderful, but I just feel like we'd all sort of grown up to the point where we could like be who we really are as improvisers. We'd all found our voice. We all knew what our thing was and we all knew how to just support each other and not, nobody needs to get out there. Nobody needs to edit a scene. Everybody's wonderful. Everybody has their strengths and we're all just so like willing to live in those strengths, you know, and just embrace them. Like if BSJ, you know, is doing some insane character, like we just let, I mean, it's such a joy to let that happen.
Yeah.
Nobody would ever want to cut that off. You know? So we all just like appreciate that about each other.
And it feels more organic. Like it's not like you're not worried about what's going to happen.
That's a big thing. I never, ever, ever feel worried in Grandma's Ashes.
That's great. That's
which is also probably a personal thing where I just feel like I've grown a lot.
I think so, yeah.
But I never feel worried. I often start scenes where I just say, where have you been? I don't even know if anybody's on stage with me, but I could do anything and it just, I know it's going to be something amazing.
I think you're right. I think it's a mix of like the people that we play with, but also how we get to that place personally.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
We have to do the work to get to that place where it's like, I'm not worried about this
anymore,
you know?
Yeah.
And like you said, it's sort of a sum total of our experiences in some way where we can have those moments of like the worst thing imaginable just happened to me and I'm okay
and it's
now.
It's okay.
Yeah,
I survived it.
Yeah. What are you afraid of now? What do you worry about?
What do I worry about now? Oh, just like real life worries, like, you know, dying and never having any money. And
it's going to happen to me in like 10 minutes.
Salmonella and peanut butter. I don't know. I mean, our shows have just been going so well and I love it so much. I love going to our show every Saturday. It's such a treat. It feels like just the best kind of therapy that you can do. I love seeing everybody. I don't know what I'm scared of right now. Probably, I don't know. I don't want to say nothing, but...
it's all right if nothing comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel good, which I think is good. And I feel good about what we're doing. I feel good about our shows. And I'm not scared of anything that says, like, let's just say something crazy happened. Like, let's just say our show got canceled.
Right.
Like, whatever. I would still feel like, well, we were successful. We had a great run, and I feel great about it. Like, nothing can really take that away ever.
Yeah.
So even if something happened right now, I'd still feel really great about everything.
That's a good place to be.
Yeah, so that's good.
So you've also, we touched on this, but you've also done a lot of acting or like written stuff, you know, improv is acting too. But you were in, you mentioned Chris Kelly, you were in his show, Oh My God, oh, I Heard God. You're Dying.
Yeah.
What was that like?
That was great. That was also a big moment, I think, in my
city.
Are we okay on time? Should I stop talking?
I'm looking at the clock. Okay. Nope, I will tell you.
Okay, Chris Kelly is just so amazing and wonderful and just the most insane person. And his humor is just so up my alley. I love it so much. I really love dark humor. Mm-hmm. And his is so dark. So anyway, he wrote this amazing show, OMG, I Heard You're Dying. And Darcy was in that show. Mm-hmm. Leslie Mizell.
Brandon Scott Jones was in that show.
PSJ, Marcy, who lives in LA now. Mm-hmm. Michael Hartney. And it was just such a great show. It was still a little bit early in my UCB career. I guess I was still on Ragnarok. And it just was like, I don't know, it was just so fun. It was just a great, it was my first written show at the theater, and just, I became really close with everybody and we all became, you know, really good friends, which happens here. You just meet so many wonderful people and you become friends, which is great.
And it was a great show. And it was, as you said, a powerful cast, like a lot of like the best performers at the theater.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And a really well-written show too.
Yeah. It was just great.
Ask you to be in it? 'Cause he had known you from classes and stuff.
I knew him from just like being around, and we were also, well, my indie team, Orphan Tycoon, did a show every week at Rafifi for a while. Mm-hmm.
Rafifi was in the East Village, and it's now closed.
Yeah. We did a show like every Wednesday at like 6 p.m. for like a long time. And we would have other indie teams come and perform with us. And Chris Kelly was on a team. I'm forgetting their name. But with like Cody and Katie Shore. Mm-hmm. And
If Will was here, he would know the name. Yeah. I don't.
I met him through that. And then, so we just always sort of knew each other. And then, we always joke, like, I thought he hated me. And then he asked me to be in his show. And I was like, yes. But then he jokes that, like, he thought I hated him. But then we all joke that we all thought we all hated each other until we did the show.
Yeah. That's how that usually goes, is like, I'm convinced that person hates me when really they don't.
Exactly. And then, Darcy and Leslie and Marcy were all so close, and it just really solidified all those friendships and was just a great, great show. And just made me feel really, I felt part of the community, but this like opened me up even more to it. So I think I really felt even more a part of it.
Okay. And that's the thing that you mentioned about it being a big moment for you, is feeling more.
Yeah. Feeling more involved. Because I think there's also pressure to feel really involved. And involved. Mm-hmm. And
being involved in a like successful, buzzed about running show at the theater is a big thing. It's like a big boost for confidence and, you know, reassuring that you're doing something right.
Yeah,
you know?
It was great.
Yeah.
Such a fun show. Oh, man.
Did you feel like, were you doing other acting outside of the theater?
Yeah. Okay. I've always done other stuff and always, you know, that's what I pursue for a living. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing like too major has happened, but little things here and there.
Sure.
I have had, whatever. This is going to sound annoying, but I'll say it.
Please.
But I have a really good relationship. Oh, no, this is too annoying.
Oh, come on, say it.
But we can cut it if it just sounds too annoying.
Right.
4708.
Okay. But so the casting people at like CBS saw me in a Ragnarok show and called me in just from seeing me on Herald Night. And since then, like, I've formed I have a relationship with I would never know if they hadn't seen me on Herald
because
Night.
Because of your performance on Herald Night, you're now in with these people who happened to see you and liked you, and you've done the work to, like, impress them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, how in the world would I get in front of CBS any other way? When am I just, like, walk up there and be like, hey, you know?
Yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they love me.
A lot of opportunities have come up through UCB. And not even with me necessarily, just like people, because it's such a great theater to come to and so many people do come to it.
Yeah.
People just like seeing you and being like, hey, come on in, come to this.
Yeah. It's like that, the skill and the luck and the timing and all that stuff. Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. It's great. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. It's great.
It's what we do, you know? What we want.
That's what we want to do. So that's good stuff.
Yeah. Remember, it's the power of language, Morgan. You have to tell yourself it's great.
Yeah, it is great. It's great. I know. I do have to use positive.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You have to use your language of love or whatever it is.
My love language.
Your love language.
Have you guys taken that test? Your love. Do you know what your love language is?
No, I haven't. I'm going to take it right now, though.
You take your test.
I will.
It's like your five. It's like the five or four love languages, and you just take this test, and you find out what your love language is.
Okay.
And either you need like quality time, physical touch, gifts, or verbal affirmation.
Okay. Sounds like I'm going to need all of them.
Yeah.
I
do too. I need all of
them. Where do you find this kind of test?
I think if you just Google like love languages, it'll come up.
Okay. All right. So everybody take that test this week and we'll compare our results.
Pause the podcast.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Go take your test and then listen
and then
to
let us know.
Yeah, listen to the rest of the podcast through that filter.
And then like let other people know because you should find somebody that your love language matches.
That's right.
Up.
Yeah. Yeah. If you tweet that out and then, you know, read the, you know, what other people are tweeting, you'll find your soulmate.
And don't be afraid to tell your partner what your love language
is. That's right. That is a great point.
Because they need to know.
Yeah. Because they need to provide you your love language.
Right.
Yeah,
and then
you need theirs.
To know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so I need to know if your love language is physical touch. Right. I will touch you more.
Because what if you're giving them space because you think, like, that's their love language?
Yeah, because that's your love language.
Right. Right. You can't project your love language onto other people.
Well, that's what we all do.
Right.
That's why this test is so important.
Mm, interesting.
Oh, God. We can cut that, too, right?
No, absolutely not. That's my favorite part of things. I take care of all the hippy-dippy bullshit on the podcast.
Okay,
there's no cutting anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know how to edit.
This is all live.
Oh, no.
This is all going out live right now.
Oh, I'm so mortified.
Okay. Okay, so you were also in The Bachelorette.
Bachelorette.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Roses, Romance, and Roses.
Roses, right. Romance, and Roses.
Yeah.
That's what The Bachelor is all about.
That's right. And that was written by Caitlin
the wonderful
and
Caitlin
Lila.
Guy and mm-hmm. Lila Comachio. Mm-hmm. Two wonderful people, also dear friends of mine, who I also did Vag Mag with.
Yes, I was going to mention that too. You did the hit web series Vag Mag.
Yes.
Vag Magazine. Right.
Vag Mag. Yeah, Vag Magazine, Vag Mag. Yeah, Caitlin and Lila are just two other people that I'm just so happy that they're a part of my life. And I feel like the three of us really love The Bachelor. And so they wrote a show. I like to think I sort of helped inspire it because we're all so obsessed with it.
Right.
And yeah. And so they wrote the show and we did it and it was fun and great and just a great show to be a part of. So silly.
Yeah,
and
it
crazy.
Was.
Oh, my God.
And well received, written about in the New York Times.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It came out in the New York Times and our pit, like we took a million pictures for the New York Times and there's and one of our pictures is in there.
Mm-hmm.
My boyfriend had it framed, you guys.
Nice. That's adorable.
It's over our dining room table.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really big.
Did he like order it from the Times and have them send it?
He like, or? We just got, like he got a copy and framed it. And it's so sweet. It's so sweet that he did that.
Yeah, it is.
But it is this big picture of me making this insane face because I'm trying to be like one of the people on the show.
Right.
So it's just like this weird, crazy picture of me like hanging over our table that I look at every morning.
Yeah.
It feels a little like self-indulgent, but it was a gift, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that part of your love language, you think? How does that fit in anyway?
You know, gift, it's not a huge part of my love language, getting gifts.
No.
I'm actually more like physical touch, I think, and affirmation.
Sure.
I like to always be touching people at all times.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, like, what do you... I don't want to ask this question. You do a lot of acting. Like, do you feel like your improv training has helped your acting?
Oh, yes.
What kinds of things do you you bring to it?
Yes. Yes. Big, big, big difference.
How so?
Just much more, like, really a lot of more confidence. Like, the ability that I, whatever's thrown at me, I know I can take. And also just with doing improv and doing all this stuff, I've really been able to find my voice.
Mm-hmm.
My like what I think is funny, my comedic voice, and also just my personal voice, who I am, and like what I want to do, and what I think I'm good at doing, which I think is great. I think it's so great to like find your thing that you're good at doing, and focus on that, you know. So all that just helps. It helps so much as a performer and as an actor. You're going out for roles, and you're in this thing that like all these people are competing for, you know, and I think it's so beneficial if you are a full package, like if you know what you are, you know who you are and what you can do. And I've heard that before from people in the industry that like if people have an option to like cast an actor who's like sort of like flailing, like, oh, I don't really know what I'm doing versus an actor who like, this is who I am, this is what I do, and this is what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I want that because you're a complete package.
Okay.
I'd rather work with, you know, I know what to do with that.
Right.
You know?
Right. So how do you get there? I mean, like, is it trial and error? How did you get to that point?
Yeah, I think just doing it and just
this works, this didn't work, yeah, I think this feels comfortable.
I think by my bazillionth scene where I played a crazy woman, I was like, this is my thing. This I just, you know, I gravitate towards scenes or I, you know, certain things I just kept doing or certain things that just felt the easiest or the most fun. And I'm like, oh, this is what I enjoy doing. This is my voice. This is what I think is funny. And just definitely by, I mean, I can't even begin to think about the hours I've spent rehearsing improv.
Sure. Yeah. None of us really want to go down that road of thinking about
it. I'd probably
kill
myself.
It's too depressing.
Yeah. The money I've spent and the hours.
I can't.
But in all that time, just constantly like creating characters and creating stories and creating things in my mind and being people and being different people and, you know, living in these worlds and just, yeah, figuring out, oh, this world is the most fun. This is what I feel like I do the best. This is what I enjoy the most. This is what I think is funny.
And I think there's something there of like being okay. Like you said, like after your millionth scene of playing a crazy woman, you were like, this is my thing. I think there's something there to accepting that that's your thing. You know, would you agree with that?
I do.
Like, because you could just as easily be like, I'm sick of, why do I always do this? I hate that I do this.
Right.
You know, so you have that option, but you also have the option of embracing it and saying, oh, this is what I like to do.
And I don't feel like I can't do anything else.
Right.
Like, I don't feel like I can't play a cowboy
or
a doctor. But it'd probably be a really loving cowboy, a really loving doctor, a really crazy doctor.
Right.
But no, like I feel like I know I can do all those things, but I know this is what I like the best and this is what feels the best. And yeah, I definitely accepting that. I think another moment I had was when I let myself, I finally just accepted that I this is going to sound weird, but like I didn't want to be on SNL. I think that's like a big thing we all sort of shoot for.
Sure.
And I felt all this pressure to always be doing characters. And like, I got to get characters. I got to do characters. I got to get a character reel. I got to get an SNL character reel. I got to do characters for SNL. And I was like, wait, I don't think I want to do characters. I don't even think I want to be on SNL. I don't even think that's my thing. I think this is my thing. And this is what I could do. And this is what I want to do. And it was like a big weight lifted off. Like, oh God, not having to deal with that SNL audition that has never happened, by the way, and never like even really pursued it.
Right.
But like just that worry of like, oh, that's not what I need. I don't need to do that if I don't want to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And based on everything that I've heard you say today, it almost seems like it's more likely to happen now that you've
once I take that
decided that you don't want to have it happen.
And some people are just so amazing with characters and impressions and stuff, and I feel like, well, if that's not my thing, that's okay.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say something to you and I forget what it was. Go ahead. Yes.
When you say that's not your thing, or because I have trouble with that, where maybe it's not your thing yet. And can you work on it? Can you get better at it? Should you work on it? You know, like, should I try to do impressions or?
I think yes, if you want to. I think I will say that it's not.
Because you know those people that are just like naturals.
Yeah.
You know, like my co-host on the radio, I think I was telling you this the other night.
Yeah.
He does tons of voices, impersonations, characters, and doesn't give a fuck. Excuse me.
It's okay. You can curse.
We can cut it.
He doesn't give a damn about improv, acting, anything. And I'm like, you're wasting that talent, or give it to me, or did you work on that? Like,
Right. Well, I think it's more like I don't need to feel the pressure to be perfect at it. Like, I do feel like, I'm actually was just thinking that I sort of am interested in taking a character class because I don't focus on that. So I think, it's more of like, I think I could do it. I think I have confidence in myself that I could do anything I really want to do if I try to and if I learn how to do it and focus on it. But it's more of like, I don't need to do it. Like, I don't need to put that pressure on myself to be perfect at something if I don't need to, you know, if I don't want to. It's like, what do I want to do?
Right.
And I don't know if I want to do characters, you know, or impressions. I like being crazy women.
Yeah.
So are you saying, are you saying that it's coming to that point of like, well, is this something that I want to do?
Right.
You know, am I just putting pressure on myself to do this, or is it something that I really want to do?
Exactly. Yeah. So like, do I want to do it? Yes or no? Because, and like, oh, like, what do we do spend so much time doing this. We might as well really do what we want to be doing, you know?
Yeah. And I think it takes a lot of time. I don't think you learn. Some people are brilliant and gifted and learn right away what they want to do. But I think for the majority of people, you know, it takes some time, maybe years to, recovery circles, I understand they talk about how it takes 5 years to get your brains back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In a certain sense, it's like it takes you time to clear up and figure out I've done all this stuff.
Yes.
Now I get that this is the thing that I want to do,
I agree.
I don't think there's any part of the pressure comes from the imagined timetable.
Yes.
I have to get great at this by this certain time.
Yeah.
Right.
Really, the only thing you have to get great at is your love language.
Exactly. That's the only thing that you should worry about.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Does that help, Saifa? Do you feel like that answered your question?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Thanks for asking that question, Saifa.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Don't tell Will that I let you talk so much this week. So you host Ladies Night, Men Welcome, right?
Yes.
You co-host that show, and you also co-host the Lady Jam, right?
Sometimes. Well, Shannon O'Neill heads up the Lady Jam,
mm-hmm.
but we all participate in it. Sorry, I just went away from the mic for a second.
That's okay.
But the Ladies Night Men Welcome is a Lydia Hensler brainchild.
Okay.
She developed this show with me, and she asked me and Shannon to be part of it and host it with her. And that was just a way to celebrate women in the community, mm-hmm. and it's just a fun. I don't really do any other sort of hosting thing like that.
Right, right, right.
So it's just fun to do. And
mm-hmm. and what do you think you get out of that? What's fun about doing that?
It's just enjoy. It's a nice environment. I don't do a lot of hosting stuff and audience interaction stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like is my strong point. So it's been good to work that muscle and just be in front of an audience where you're just talking to the audience and not performing,
mm-hmm.
And it's just been fun to hang out with Lydia and Shannon, who I love. And I love Shannon, and I never got a lot of, I feel like I didn't really spend a lot of time with her in improv. So this is a great way to be around her more. And she's such a influence to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have great women come on and do fun stuff, and mm-hmm. it's just a supportive, fun environment.
Sure.
It's just great.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great environment, and everybody seems to really enjoy it. The audience really enjoys it, and I think we've just had some moments that have been oh, this is so nice. That wouldn't happen if we didn't have this show,
Mm-hmm. There's, always a lot of talk in comedy world, mm-hmm. the comedy world, and in this community about the role of women and mm-hmm. opportunities for women. Do you have mm-hmm. an opinion about that or feelings about that?
I do. I will say that my opinion on it is almost not an opinion because I've never seen a difference mm-hmm. other than people talking about it. It's never been a thing for me. I've never once thought about my life or what I do or the comedy that I do in any sort of comparison way
mm-hmm.
at all. I've just never thought about it. I think if you're in it, you don't think about it. I think it's the people that aren't in it that mm-hmm. say stuff, you know?
Like the people that have a hard time getting into it who are completely removed from it.
Yeah, people that are whoever is out there saying women aren't funny or whatever. I know people will talk about somebody said that.
Right,
which
is
nonsense.
Or people
say it every now and then. And,
but we've also gotten there are less opportunities for women in this community and they're less,
I guess.
And worse things have been said, probably.
And I guess there are, but again, I don't feel like I've had any less opportunities than anybody else, I feel like. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Sure.
And I just don't think it's as... I know it's true. I know it's out there. But maybe it's just how we perceive it in a way. I don't feel any different about it. And maybe it's because I don't, believe in it. It mm-hmm. just doesn't exist in my world because I don't see it.
Right.
I don't know. But... Yeah, I just think I never felt hesitant to do anything mm-hmm. because I was a woman. I never felt weird in this community.
You've never let that idea influence the way that you behave or the way that you carry yourself.
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. not at all. Because it just doesn't even relate to me. I mean, it just doesn't even, it doesn't even.
Sure.
Doesn't compute. Just don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a great answer, I think. Thank you.
Okay.
And also you're teaching now, right?
Yes.
How's that?
Good. Should I feel bad about saying that? I don't want to be non-supportive towards women because I don't like if
no.
you're okay. Like if
Go
there's
ahead,
women
but
out
elaborate
there,
elaborate on your point.
Okay. If there's mm-hmm. women out there listening to this who do feel that way.
Oh, this is what I was going
to
ask you.
Yeah. I don't mean to be like, no, that doesn't exist. Because
right.
if you feel that way, you feel that way.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to a woman who feels like that to try to, like, how would you help somebody through those feelings? Well, because you're right, it is a valid feeling if you have it. Nobody can take it away from you.
Yeah.
But how would you, what would be your advice to somebody who feels like that?
I sort of had that moment one time where a student did mention to me, like, feeling a lot of pressure as a woman to, like, be perfect or, like, to be a better improviser than anybody else. And she was like, do you feel that pressure? And I was like, no. And don't, why would you put that pressure on yourself? Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Why don't, you're not, you don't need to be the, I mean, don't put all that pressure on yourself. You just do what you do and do what you think is funny and do what you want to be doing and enjoy yourself. And that's where that's, and then it all goes away. Like, don't, no need to put that kind of pressure on yourself. Because who wants to be the pressure to, like, I got to be the change in this community.
Right.
Like, just do what you do and embrace it and enjoy it. And that's all the change that ever needs to happen.
Exactly. And that's really the only thing that you can change is, like, well, how do I feel about this? And what am I doing about this? You can't run around being like, everybody stop doing what they're doing or everybody change.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just like, well, what am I going to do differently?
Exactly. So, yeah. So, like, don't worry about it. Just do it. Don't ever put that pressure on yourself to be the best or the better or whatever, because it's just going to make you go insane. I mean, obviously I have been there.
Right.
So yeah, I would just say, just don't, it can't exist if you don't let it exist in a way. I know it exists. I know it does, but you don't have to indulge in it.
I think both points are valid though. I think it's valid that to say that it exists in some way, but it's also valid to say, like, well, you don't have to let it rule your life.
Yeah.
You don't have to feed into that. You don't have to, like, you can, you don't have to acknowledge it.
And I guess there are more men in this community, and I guess it is sort of like a, there's more men, but
and it's changing. Like, we've definitely, like, taken steps to, like, make women feel more welcome in the last couple of years and increase the number of women that are in advanced study.
Yeah.
And we're constantly working on that, you know,
which is great. And I never felt not welcome. Like, I never felt hesitant. I never felt held back. And I never felt the need to change myself at all to be, bless you. Oh,
that
cough.
Was a cough. That's okay. Right.
To be a certain way. I never felt like I needed to not just be exactly who I am. And if anything, I've gotten girlier over the time. And, like, more, like, over the time of just, like, I don't know. You got to just do you. You got to do you, right?
Like Russell Simmons says.
Embrace yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. That's a great answer.
Okay.
I think that's a good place to leave it. One more thing I wanted to ask you. What's the ultimate goal for Morgan? Like, what do you, you talked about how you don't want to be on SNL, but what in your...
I'm talking about my non-goals. Yeah. SNL, not a goal.
Right. But what's, like, in your dream world or in, like, when you... In your private moments when you fantasize about your dreams, like...
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, I will tell you my dream fantasy, but then I'm going to tell you my, like, real life fantasy.
Okay.
Okay. I guess my dream fantasy, I mean, this would be, like, dreams, would be... like, to have my own TV show.
Okay.
That I, like, have some sort of creative control.
Like a sitcom or...
Yeah, okay. Something like that.
Okay.
But something that's, like, fun. I have to say, like Veep, for instance, is just... I love that show. And I feel like Julia Louis...
Co-starring Matt Walsh from the UCB Theater.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Everybody
oh.
should be watching Veep.
That it's such an amazing show. But also... Julia Louis-Dreyfus,
yes,
who
Julia
is the star of that. Yeah. I feel like I watch her in that role, and that's a role that I would love to play. And I'm just thinking, like, what that would just be a dream of, just to find a show or any, whether it's a TV or movie or theater, that a role that you can just, like, dig your teeth into that you would love, that is really something that you want to do. So I would say some sort of something like that, that is something that I really want to do, that I have some sort of creative control over. With a nice little family, with a bunch of babies and cats with three legs, and I bring
cats
them all
with
to work
three
with
legs?
Me. Yeah.
That's a goal of yours.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have...
Yeah, in my dream, I also have, like, a house where I can adopt all these animals
What's
that
with
need
that?
To be adopted.
You want to take care of something
nobody
that
else
is...
wants them.
Okay.
So, and just, like, I'm married, you know. Mm-hmm. So okay, so this is my, that's my dream fantasy.
Right.
But my real life fantasy is this. I just want to be happy, and I am happy.
Great.
So I'm sort of living my fantasy. Mm-hmm. I'm happy. I have wonderful friends, and I have a wonderful boyfriend, and we have a very lovely life together, and, you know, all that stuff, that's really what it's all about. I get to do something I love to do. I get to do improv and do it with people that I love, and I also get to have, you know, a wonderful personal life that's fulfilling, and I get to live in New York, and that's really all I ever want. So
that's a great answer, and I agree. I think that's really what it's all about. Like, mm-hmm. you could have everything and not be happy.
Oh yeah.
Or you could have nothing and be happy, or you can have what you have and be happy. You know, there's
it's
that thing.
A choice.
I work a lot on this, and I have this struggle of like, I think I am a little bit too much this way in some mm-hmm. regards, but I think about this of like the kind of person who like, well, you have this, you reach this goal, and mm-hmm. you want this goal, and then you reach it, and you're like, well, why don't I have this goal? And then right. you reach that goal, and you're like, yeah, but why don't I have this goal?
Yes.
You know, like, for instance, like, you get a TV show, and you're like, yeah, but why don't I have a movie? And then you get a movie, and it's like, well, why mm-hmm. aren't I getting paid this much money? And then you get that salary, and you're like, why don't I have this?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Rather than being able to
just
say,
being happy.
I am happy today. And that's, it's mm-hmm. not, it's never external circumstances.
That's the thing. It's not all that other stuff.
Yeah. It's what's inside. Yeah.
And that's so true. And that's why I always say, I'm like, if that fantasy like dream show never happens, it's okay. Like, I will still be happy.
Yeah.
Over a year ago, I quit my day job, and I've been able to just live. Thank you. And I've been able to just live the life that I want to live.
That's awesome.
And that in itself is,
how many people get to do that?
Oh my God. That's, you know? That's totally success
to me.
And
if you can't embrace that and be happy with that, like, exactly. it's just a spiral of never being able to be happy.
If this is all that ever happens, I am so happy, and I feel so successful. And, but it really is a matter of just embracing it. And
yeah. That's great.
You gotta do that.
Before we go, you said that you could probably play a cowboy or a doctor. So I'm going to initiate a scene where you're playing a doctor, and we're going to see how
God.
It goes.
But,
so,
but not my
right,
not my strong
right,
point.
Not your right.
I don't
so
know
we're
going to
see
terms.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, so, Dr. Jarrett, thank you for seeing me on such short notice. I just have this really bad cough that won't go away.
Oh no. Well, can I ask you something serious?
Yeah. Sure.
Do you know what your love language is?
No, I don't really know what that is. I know I have a really bad cough.
All right. Okay. Well, sure, sure. Yeah. Let's check your cough.
Okay.
Do you feel like you need a lot of time with your partner? Do you feel like you like to get gifts?
I guess. Is this part of working on my cold? Is this part of the diagnosis?
Well, I'm just sort of asking you, but I'm going to check your cough and stuff and check your temperature and everything.
Yeah. You have a lot of hearts all over this room.
Yeah. Oh, I decorated this room myself. Not a lot of doctors decorate their own offices, but I did this.
Yeah.
This is an angel. It's just an angel statue.
Okay. That's great.
See, that's my doctor.
Yeah.
My doctor is still a crazy woman.
Well, you got to embrace it.
I do. I embrace it. I'm happy.
Thank you so much, Morgan. This is really great. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I hope this was good.
It was awesome.
Okay.
What do you want to plug? Where can people see you at UCB or outside of UCB?
Well, every Saturday with the old Gammies, mm-hmm. Ashies.
Saturday at 10:30 at Chelsea.
Uh-huh. And we have a Ladies Night Men Welcome coming up next Tuesday at 8 o'clock at the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, just for fun, my Twitter is Miss Morgan Grace.
Yeah, plug the shit out of that.
Yeah, I tweet about smoothies that I make.
Okay. Miss Morgan Grace. M-I-S-S Morgan Grace.
Just M-S.
Oh, M-S? Ms. Morgan Grace.
Ms. Morgan Grace. Ms. Oh, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
thank you, Sypha.
Thank you.
Anything you want to plug?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I am now the official DJ of the Wednesday Night Improv Jam.
That's amazing.
It was amazing.
I had my soft launch on the Grandma Vash's last show.
Okay.
And it was super fun.
Great.
Super energetic. And thank you for everybody that's letting me be down with that.
Of course.
Oh, God. It was so awesome. I was like dancing so hardcore.
And thank you, Keaton.
Yeah, thanks, Keaton.
Keaton in the back.
Keaton stole the show.
He did.
He's got the biggest applause of the night.
I want to see those pictures.
Oh, at the jam?
At the jam.
Really?
Final jam.
Yeah?
Came out and connected the whole scene.
Nice.
And everybody went crazy.
Keaton.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was a big deal.
Okay, and you can see Airwolf every Saturday at 10:30. And yeah, let's see, this will come out next Tuesday. So a week from this Thursday, you can see us in the cage match finals.
Oh, that! Oh, yeah. You guys won last night?
We won last night. Nice. So you can see us in the championships the last Thursday, or the second to last Thursday of this month, facing either Doppelganger or What I Did for Love.
What I Did for Love still in it.
Yeah.
Man, that's, you going to take this thing home?
I would love to. I've never been in the finals of cage match before. I've never been this far.
I was speaking. You beat North Coast, right?
We beat North Coast last night.
Yeah, they were worried.
That was
a couple
a big
nights
deal.
Before. I saw a couple
been.
Guys, and rightfully so. They were
cage match. Oh man,
I'm always worried about cage match.
Oh,
please forget it. I never think I'm going to win.
Me out.
Yeah.
I just
forget
I
it.
Can't. I remember we had that big one.
Yes,
and it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was great and everything, all that stuff. But right. I mean, just too stressful.
I've talked about this on this podcast, but I get competitive.
Yes,
and
I do too.
Immature to the point where I am still embarrassed about that cage match.
Well,
because
we lost
I was
shortly after,
right?
We
but
didn't,
I was
like, go
so
into an amazing
we had
run.
Won 13. If we'd won one more, we would have tied Derek's
oh
record.
My God.
And I was so I want to say I was so angry, but I was a fucking baby about
no,
it. I was
I
like
know.
Such an
we
immature
all...
child about losing that. It took me a good couple of hours afterwards to be like, oh, what am I doing?
I
apologize for being
no,
such a
I
child about
too,
that.
Because I got we all got so competitive about it, where we were like, we want to win, and I
yeah.
just, I feel terrible because I want you guys to win too.
Right.
I wanted us both to win.
Mm-hmm.
It
yeah.
just became so stressful.
It
just
you know, it can't.
Oh,
you can't
that
put a bunch of you know, it's you can't put a bunch of insecure, loving improvisers in a competitive environment.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's over and life goes on.
Thank God. And then yeah. we went back for the finals. We lost. We lost.
Right.
We lost right away. I'm done.
Right.
I say it's not a big deal, but it is. When you lose, you feel like a fucking idiot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's true.
All right.
Okay.
So what's your love language?
I'm going to find out. Everybody go look up their love language and let us know next week. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.